This hour of the Jason Rant Show brought to you by You Build It. Lots of news is happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? The homelessness crisis.
Schools are reopened across Washington state, so that's a good thing. Schools here in Seattle, despite the teachers' union dragging its feet, they're also reopened. And yet one particular school is dealing with a homeless encampment on its property. The one over in Capitol Hill with Meany Middle School, that has been dismantled. They cleared it over the weekend. And it turns out when you force an encampment to leave, they leave. And some of them, many of them, take up offers of shelter. They were made, some were taken. Not all of them. That's on you. If you don't want to take us up on our offers of help, okay, bye. I think the kids say, bye, Felicia.
Yeah, the kids in like 2012.
Okay, well, they said it though.
They also said deuces, but that was like 2008.
They said deuces, Felicia.
Okay, you tried.
However, a similar encampment, a much larger encampment on a much larger amount of property that belongs to the district, remains over at Broadview Thompson K through 8 in Bitter Lake. The district, the school board, will not clean up the encampment. They will not allow for a sweep. And as a result, kids are in danger. Kids are in danger. I spoke to a parent today who sent me a photo. I've got it up at Twitter. I hope you'll check it out. A photo of a samurai sword next to a tent. I was at this encampment yesterday. I took video. I went on a tour. Took lots of photos. That's going to be up on my blog a little bit later this evening. Perhaps we'll talk about it tomorrow morning on the Faulkner Focus on Fox News. I sent video to a bunch of people, not just, I was looking at you. It wasn't just Peyton who I sent the video to. I sent to a few people in case I died.
I'm kind of bummed out that you didn't find the samurai sword.
I didn't see the samurai sword, mostly because I was trying to. It is a large encampment, and people were out. It was the middle of the day, and I didn't want to be seen videotaping, because there could be someone with a samurai sword who would then come and kill me. So I had to do it on the DL.
It's called security, okay?
Oh, yeah. Attacking the, that's called attack of press freedom. So I'll have the video up. It is alarming that this is right next to the school. The school knows that it's dangerous, which is why they locked up the fencing behind the school. It is so dangerous that they had to make sure that student and staff members only enter and exit through the front entrance of the school rather than cut through the park, which kids used to enjoy, but not anymore. But of course, acknowledging that it's dangerous doesn't mean they're going to do anything about it. They're going to keep it up there. Parents spoke to Caro 7 TV.
I just think it's a recipe for disaster. I knew it had gotten bad, but I didn't realize how out of control it was.
Now, they won't sweep the encampment because the encampment is filled with, these are human beings, and sweeping an encampment is inhumane. Putting them into shelter? That is inhumane. We at the Seattle School Board, led by Chandra Hampson, we keep these people in humane environments outside, surrounded by human waste and needles and meth and trash. That's where they belong. We don't bring them inside.
There is no other schools that have an encampment next to it in the union. The children deserve the path to school to be free and safe so they can walk to school safe.
Yeah, well, they don't get that. Not in Seattle. And they don't get it because Seattle parents put up with this nonsense. I mean, it's really that simple. You either allow for this by staying silent and voting these people into office, or you speak up, you push back, you vote them out. You recall them. They're up for recall. Every single one of the teachers, school board directors. Every single one. So, it's on you guys. I've done what I can. I'll continue to report on it. I'll continue to talk about it. I'll continue to go and visit and take photos and video. I'll continue to go on Fox News and sound the alarms. But at some point, the people who are most impacted, the parents of these kids who are now sending their kids next to a massive encampment filled with people who are doing drugs, who are hanging out with their ninja swords, you need to do something. It's really that simple. Because if you lead it up to the leadership, in air quotes, in Seattle, nothing's going to get done. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? The Biden administration.
So over the weekend, despite for weeks claiming there was no emergency or crisis at the border, they ended up closing a migrant center in Houston for unaccompanied minors. They did that because a whole bunch of allegations were made about the treatment of the hundreds of young girls who were there, basically saying, you're putting them in unlivable circumstances. What was so bad, according to the sources talking to ABC News? Well, for starters, it had been run by a Houston-based nonprofit that had no experience in housing unaccompanied migrant children. And that might play a role in how poorly they were treated, possibly due to the fact that they were overrun by a crisis, not a challenge. Cesar Espinoza is a local activist out there, and he spoke to ABC News and said the treatment was despicable.
They were more treated like merchandise rather than treated as human beings. The girls were not allowed to get up unless it was to shower or to use the restroom. Even their meals were delivered to their cots.
Their restrooms, by the way, at times were simply plastic bags that they were using as toilets. These are 13 to 17-year-old girls. There weren't enough staff members to accompany them to restrooms, so they were just given plastic bags. According to ABC News, a spokesperson for the nonprofit would neither confirm nor deny the allegations. That's always a really great way to respond to damning allegations like forcing young girls to use a plastic bag as a toilet amidst the national conversation of our challenge at the border. Although for the first time, we heard Joe Biden call this a crisis. We'll play the audio. It's not very easy to understand, so we might bail depending on how it sounds. It's very short. But I just, real quickly, and this is on me for not checking in with you, Producer Payton. I was a little excited in our pre-show meeting that I delivered you from the scourge of putting gel in your hair like a 12-year-old boy, which you brought shame to the show, to yourself, to me, to your family.
Thank
by
you.
Putting gel in your hair, so I got you correct product.
You did. You got me a nice product and a nice variety of it.
Because we, on this show, care about one thing and one thing alone, which is our hair.
Yes.
That's what we care about. And if you can't handle that, go work on a different show. Okay? If you don't like that, go work at Cairo. Okay? They clearly don't care about that stuff.
They really don't.
Oh my God, they don't. Was there any audio today or over the weekend of, say, Pramila Jayapal, congresswoman from Seattle, going down to the border and making a big deal about this and crying and bringing cameras along with her and pointing a giant spotlight to this huge issue?
No.
You said that very... I mean, did you even look?
I did look, and there was none.
AOC?
AOC, no.
Ilhan Omar?
No.
Rashida Tlaib?
Nope.
Jerry Nadler?
No.
Okay. Any Democrat?
No, not a single Democrat, no.
Because I got a long list of names I could read.
I know you do. None of them. Let me just save you the time. None of them made it to the border.
Wall-to-wall coverage on CNN?
No.
Okay. But during Trump, we had a lot of that, though.
Tons.
I don't seem to recall 13 to 17-year-old girls being forced to use a plastic bag as a toilet, though.
Now that you mention it, I don't either.
Okay. Well, Joe Biden used the term crisis.
We're going to increase the number.
The
problem was that
crisis. He said crisis. Did you hear? It's very hard.
I heard crisis in there.
He did say crisis. However, just because the president says it's a crisis doesn't mean the White House, for the Biden presidency, believes it's a crisis. The White House put out a statement today that said the president's use of the crisis label doesn't represent the administration's official position. If not a statement by the President of the United States, what does represent the official position of the White House? Or are we now definitely not pretending that he's in charge? Jen Psaki took questions on this earlier today.
The president does not feel that children coming to our border seeking refuge from violence, economic hardships, and other dire circumstances is a crisis. He does feel that the crisis in Central America, the dire circumstances that many are fleeing from, that is a situation we need to spend our time, our effort on, and we need to address
That's
it if we're going to prevent more of an influx of migrants from coming in years to come.
Okay. Maybe he got confused.
Maybe she got confused.
I'm going to go with he got confused.
That's probably more likely.
I'm going to go with Joe Biden got confused. 1-800-465-877 if you want to send me a text message. I'll be on the Faulkner Focus tomorrow in the 8 o'clock hour, 8 o'clock a.m., of course. Hope you'll tune in. If you can't, check out my YouTube channel. Just text the keyword RANTS, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770. And I'll send you a link so you can become a subscriber. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? You can't make this up.
So we talked about Aldon Smith on Friday. He is the new star player for the Seahawks. They've been after this dude for at least a year. They tried to get him last year. They weren't able to do it. But finally, there was some room for negotiation from the Cowboys, right?
Yeah, I mean, they cut him
yeah.
in.
We don't need to just go after the guy. He's just trying to make a living in between beating up women and you know, other people.
Yeah, I mean, we definitely took a little bit of a dive into his legal issues on his Wikipedia page, and that's going to get longer now.
Yeah, didn't look good for him on Friday, and this after, you know, the Seahawks love to talk about how they're all about the social justice causes. This is a team that cares deeply about the community, you know, or except for maybe women who might get abused by their husbands or boyfriends. It is weird that domestic violence doesn't take a priority with this team, seemingly. A team that I don't have a natural inclination to go against because of their politics. I do try to separate it out as best as I can. Same thing with the Sounders. They're insufferable with their politics. Over the weekend, they apparently read, I missed this, I didn't, because I wasn't at the game, I watched it. They read a long land acknowledgement about how they're playing on stolen land. They don't actually give the land back, of course, but they're playing on stolen land because that's what you're supposed to do now, is acknowledge the land that was stolen, which was not stolen. But I try to separate that out and pay attention to the game. But when you go out of your way to talk about how woke you are, about how you really care about the community, and you will support all of these social justice causes, it just feels weird to me that you would make a signing like a Frank Clark or an Aldon Smith. He's got a warrant out for his arrest now for something that allegedly took place just a couple days ago, April 17th, in New Orleans or near New Orleans. According to ESPN, St. Bernard Parish District Attorney Perry Niskosia says that Aldon Smith allegedly choked a victim unconscious during a confrontation that began inside of a coffee house in Chalmette, Louisiana. The warrant was signed a day later. The alleged incident rises to a second-degree battery because the victim was rendered unconscious. She said the victim was taken to the hospital, didn't have to stay overnight, but did suffer, quote, severe injuries. What that actually means, they don't actually say. If Aldon Smith is convicted of second-degree battery charges, he faces a fine up to $2,000 and or 8 years in prison. Which, again, we've had this conversation before. If you get to choose, I'm going to go with the $2,000.
Yeah, 2K seems a lot easier to do than, you know,
2K
8 years.
Or 8 years. I'll take the 2K, sir. In fact, because it seems just like an imbalance, I'll double it. I'll give you 4,000. So this is a bad dude. I know he's innocent until proven guilty, but he does have a track record of this kind of behavior. He hasn't even gotten to Seattle yet.
No, he hasn't.
So the Seahawks are in an interesting predicament. You took him despite the domestic violence accusations. Are you going to dump him after choking someone unconscious?
I mean, who
Which
knows?
Is not as bad as a domestic violence allegation. It's bad.
They put out a 3-sentence statement on it today. They said, we are aware of the reports regarding Alden Smith.
Uh-huh.
Alden notified us, and we are gathering more information. Uh-huh. We have no further comment at this time. If there's a warrant out for his arrest, and the Seahawks come out and say that he notified us, like, don't the Seahawks have to, like, get involved with the police and be like, hey, Alden just called us. He left Louisiana. He's headed for Texas right now. He ain't coming back.
I don't know if he's not allowed to leave. I didn't read the warrant. He's probably allowed to leave.
I mean, he's still got to, like...
He's got to go back.
He's got to get arrested at some point if there's a warrant out for his arrest.
He might have turned himself in already.
I have not seen that yet.
Well, the internet sometimes is slow.
Oh, yeah? Twitter's the slow place for
information. Well, he also... Again, it depends on certain circumstances. I don't even know if you I don't know how it works in a COVID era.
Do you have to physically turn yourself
in? Yeah, I wonder
if you can social distancely turn yourself in.
Can you, like, turn yourself in via Zoom in a COVID world? Because it's not like he's going to spend any time in jail.
No,
most people get arrested in this country right now aren't spending any time in jail.
Yeah, you got to get booked and then just get re-released,
they just release
right?
you. So why are you risking COVID?
Just don't choke people out in public, at least.
Well, I mean, let's see who he choked out.
You want to see if
I want to know who. Apparently, it's on video, or at least a portion of it might be on surveillance camera or caught on cell phone video of some kind, according to ESPN. So we'll find out. You got to cut him, right?
You have to. Come on.
You Which can't. Then makes it a bigger story and a bigger controversy. Because it's not like they can say, well, y'all knew who he was.
But can't you at
why
least
is
be
it
like...
that this was the moment that went too far? Seriously, why is it that this went too far? But the domestic violence, the... Wasn't he involved potentially in a stabbing?
Yeah, in
okay.
like 2013, I think we read or something.
And the DUIs.
And the bomb yelled at the airport. Like, yeah, there's a lot going on there.
So... Why, again, why would it be that this is the incident that was a step too far for the Seahawks?
I mean, I got to assume that they're going to say, like, we talked to him. This was the second chance we gave him. He blew it two days later. Hold on.
You mean, like, the 18th chance given?
The 18th chance, like, given by the league. But technically, that was, like, the first chance he was given by the Seahawks, so... It's got to balance out somewhere.
This is, let's not say that this was the second chance, is what I'm saying.
No, I get that.
He has nothing but, he's been given nothing but chances. In a world, by the way, that we're told about privilege that only white people have. He got a lot of privilege here.
Do you think John Schneider says anything about this, or do you think he just stays quiet until the draft, which is in 10 days?
I think in this market, no one will push this. You'll get some commentary, right? You'll get some because you can't avoid any commentary, but it won't be relentless. It won't be. It should be. And it should be driven, by the way, by the woke scolds over at the Seattle Times or Crosscut and The Athletic and those places who love to remind us on Twitter about how woke they are. They're all about social justice causes. They're all about fighting against the war on women, against the evil right wingers. But they won't say anything here. I guarantee you. I guarantee you.
I think you're right.
They will say absolutely nothing. They will say absolutely nothing. Because they will back the Seahawks no matter what. We have an interest in the Seahawks. Full disclosure, right? They're partners with our sister stations. I know John Schneider from working with him briefly when he's in this building for... a charity that he runs with his wife. Good dude. Love his wife. His wife is awesome. I just question this decision, given all of the talk around how they approach the locker room and their players and their commitment to the community. And I think that that is reasonable, and I do think that they should speak to that. I just know that they won't because there's not a lot of voices that will just challenge it outright. I would. I'll yell.
I like it when you yell.
I'll yell.
Well, not at me. When you yell at other people.
Well, if you wouldn't put gel in your hair, you despicable beast, I'm going to choke you out.
Okay, now
until you're unconscious.
You're going to get second degree battery.
Okay, but I'll get a second chance. I'll go work for the SEAL. I'm kidding. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text message. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. There is a lot to talk about with my next guest as Democrats continue this ludicrous claim that Georgia is pushing Jim Crow 2.0, while at the same time, Senate Republicans are pushing an antitrust bill that impacts Major League Baseball. Ken Cuccinelli is former Attorney General for Virginia, and he's the former Acting Deputy Secretary over at DHS under President Donald Trump. Welcome to the show. Really appreciate it.
Good to be with you.
So,
no, my pleasure.
There's a hearing tomorrow. It's so silly. They title it Jim Crow 2021, the latest assault on the right to vote. How much does bad faith attempts like this hurt this country? Just sort of big picture first.
Well, you know, that's a good question. Now, I hadn't really thought of it that way, but there's, you know, when you start out with the presumption that is, you know, revealed in the title, it's hard to think of it as anything constructive, because it isn't constructive, and it isn't necessarily intended to be. This is what they have figured out, is that America doesn't like their election bill because it kicks the door open to fraud, wipes out state election laws, just does one terrible thing after another. It will sweep millions of illegal aliens onto our voter rolls. And so instead of trying to push the bill, what they're doing is they're starting off with their boogeyman. Mm-hmm. And they're going to, their strategy is to say, oh my gosh, look at this terrible problem that exists. And of course, the problem is the opposite of what they say, but they're going to come and characterize the Georgia bill legislation as somehow suppressing the vote, even though even the Washington Post has called the president a liar on that. You know, it's just, but that's their angle. That's their strategic plan. So first they're going to say, look at this big, terrible problem. And then they're going to bring the bill and say, now we will solve the problem. You know, I'll pay the rent. And that's the strategy. And that begins tomorrow with their, in the Senate, with their hearing, which they are calling, as you know, Jim Crow 2.0, apparently taking no notice of the fact that it was Democrats that gave us Jim Crow 1.0.
Yeah, no kidding.
But, you know, minor detail.
Yeah, minor detail. We'll forget that part. So, obviously.
Yeah. Well, truth has never been a big deal to them.
Yeah, very clearly. So, then let's talk about the truth of H.R. 1, which is the bill that you are referring to. Our Secretary of State, Kim Wyman, Republican, who is lauded by both sides as being incredibly fair. She has come out against H.R. 1. She had testified at a House Administration Subcommittee hearing on this issue. What is the biggest concern you have with H.R. 1?
Wow. The biggest single concern. It's almost hard to whittle it down to one. So it illegalizes, there's 800 pages in this bill, just so you know. And, you know, you and I are talking about elections, but there's free speech problems in there that are so bad, even the ACLU says they're unconstitutional. They wipe out redistricting reforms, including in states like mine in Virginia, where we just passed it with 76% of the vote. So in addition to all that, it also wipes out voter ID. Now, this is a double negative, so I'm going to say it slowly. This bill would make it illegal for states to require voter ID. Did you follow that? So it illegalizes voter ID in voting.
Oh,
the only thing it allows is a signature requirement. Now, mind you, they also require same-day voter registration. So I can, Ken Cuccinelli can walk up to the polls and say, hey, I'm Ken Jones, and I want to register to vote. I don't have to show them any ID, and all I have to do is sign Ken Jones, mm-hmm. and I'm on the books, and in I go to vote. And then I can go to the next polling place, say, hey, I'm Ken Smith, I want to register to vote. Same thing, over and over and over all day, and there's nothing you can do to stop it. Even if you figure out that this guy was poll hopping all day, which ballots do you pull out of the ballot box? It's one of the unique things about elections, is that we can't solve the problem very easily on the backside. So security on the front side is even more important.
Exactly, because you have no idea who this person actually ended up voting for. And, you know, part of the issue here is, you know, we've got states like Washington that is all done by mail. Do you have any idea states like that would be impacted?
Well, they would also be impacted in terms of many of the mail states still require identification.
Yep.
They require association with an identification. For instance, on absentee ballots, they might require you to put the last four digits of your driver's license number. Well, the federal bill makes that illegal. It wipes out even those meager, rudimentary attempts at security. And in the most difficult to secure part of an election, the mail-in part, it's really one thing after another. So it illegalizes, well, let's start at the top. It effectively wipes out all states' election laws and creates one Washington-imposed one-size-fits-all solution. It mandates this ballot harvesting that was such a problem in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
It illegalizes voter ID. It mandates same-day voter registration, which is a logistical impossibility for most states to do by their next election. It couldn't be done. Democrat election officials say that. And there are Democrat election officials openly criticizing this legislation. One of them is going to be in the hearing tomorrow. He is the Democrat Secretary of State of New Hampshire, who has served in that position since the late 70s. And their Secretary of State is elected by their state legislature. And you might say, wait a minute, surely they haven't controlled the state legislature by one party for all those years. And that is true. He keeps getting reelected by Republicans as well as Democrats because he does such a good job.
Yeah.
Imagine that, electing somebody because they do a good job. And he's coming in tomorrow as a Republican witness against, well, you know, let's call this what it is. It's a pre-hearing on Senate Bill 1. And he has been very critical of his Democrat congressional representatives for supporting this legislation. He says it wipes out a good system in New Hampshire. He's certainly right about that. And he has said that it threatens their first in the nation primary status, which is something that in New Hampshire they think is a pretty big deal.
I hate that they get to go first. That bothers me.
I do, too. In New Hampshire, you know, do you really want your own congressional representatives to wipe you out of that position?
It's very weird.
Because it gives them disproportionate influence. They love it because it gives them disproportionate influence.
So, if you're just joining us, by the way, we're talking with Ken Cuccinelli. He's the former Attorney General of Virginia and former Acting Deputy Secretary at DHS under former President Trump. Do you think this actually has a shot of passing this time around?
Well, it certainly does if they get rid of the filibuster. I think the critical thing that here is, do Joe Manchin and Margaret Hassan and
Sinema,
even Dianne Feinstein has spoken against getting rid of the filibuster occasionally. Kristen Sinema, John Tester, these are all Democrat senators who've made favorable comments about keeping the filibuster because of the role the filibuster plays in American politics. And if they keep that filibuster, I don't see that you can amend a bill like this enough to get 10 Republican votes.
Yeah. It'll be really difficult. But the problem is, of course, because a Dianne Feinstein, for example, has come out against the getting rid of the filibuster, that makes her a prime target. She's already become a prime target from the left in California, and there's no way a Republican has a reasonable shot. So consider her career is going to be over soon anyway. She is aging out, essentially, of her role there. So she's going to be out, and she's going to be replaced by another far-left progressive who will take a position of getting rid of the filibuster.
You know, one of the things that's interesting out there, though, you try to screw around as they did with the California election system. And so what you end up doing is Republican, when that even farther left person challenged Dianne Feinstein, what Republicans ended up doing probably is voting for Feinstein. which sounds crazy, but when the alternative is Karl Marx rolled in together with Vladimir Lenin, you know, she doesn't look so bad, right? And but that's I think you're going to see increasing frustration from their truly radical left. Again, even farther left than Dianne Feinstein, in their inability to finally elect people because Republicans get to participate in those elections. And their target, of course, was to keep conservatives from getting elected. Well, lo and behold, they're keeping their own people out.
Yeah, and you know what? We'll see what ends up happening with this Gavin Newsom recall to see what the electorate is actually feeling in California. We only have about a minute left. I just very briefly, MLB obviously got involved in the Georgia election law. Yeah. They boycotted the state over it. So now we've got Senators Hawley, Cruz, and Lee. They introduced a bill to strip them of antitrust protections. What realistically would that, what practically would that mean for Major League Baseball?
Well, as a practical matter, it wouldn't be immediate, but we have continually seen alternative league challenges over, you know, during my lifetime. I'm over 50. We've seen it in the NBA. We've seen it in the NFL a couple of times in the NFL. We've seen it in hockey. So, there's no reason to think Major League Baseball is immune from that. And with their farm system, interestingly enough, there's plenty of players available if people want to start another league.
Mm-hmm.
And look, this is entertainment. That's what it is. There's nothing golden about it. They've been given the gift of antitrust protection, as has the NFL and so forth. And as these senators have made clear, if you're going to mess around with the very foundation of our democracy, we're not going to protect you in some special way, unlike what we do for every other business in this country. That seems reasonable to me.
Seems reasonable to me as well. Again, Ken Cuccinelli, former Attorney General of Virginia and former Acting Deputy Secretary at DHS under President Trump. Thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Great to be with you.
Thank you. You've been listening to the Jason Rantz Show. Welcome back to the Jason Rantz Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. On CNN yesterday, a rather absurd and almost insulting segment by Brian Stelter, who's the biggest doofus over at CNN. He has a show that no one watches, but we find clips of over at Mediaite or Grabian.com. And he talked about an issue that we mentioned before the weekend. I believe we did it on Friday, maybe on Thursday's show, where a CNN crew was assaulted by a mob of lunatics in Minneapolis. You see, when we cover protests and demonstrations and riots, we're honest about what is happening. When CNN covers it, they pretend all is well. There could literally be a fight breaking out in front of a burning building that is actively getting besieged upon by a dragon. And CNN will be like, all is well here, totally peaceful, all good. Fire can be coming out of the dragon's mouth. And we'll be saying, oh, it's a festival here, feeling just, you know, people got their pets out. Good time. They will never acknowledge any of the violence. But you would expect that if their own crew gets assaulted, including a cameraman who got hit in the head with a water bottle to the point where it knocked him over. It was one of those weird things. Like sometimes, you know, when you get hit in the head, you do a little bit of a delayed reaction because you get thrown so hard. He did a little bit of delayed reaction. He fell over for a moment, like in stun. And then he got back up. CNN did not cover it for 4 days. But the right-wing media did. It got picked up in right-wing media circles, according to Brian Stelter. He spoke to the reporter who was there, who he revealed, also was assaulted, just didn't get caught on video. His name is Miguel Marquez. Listen to how he talks about what happened. This is almost like a publicist talking about his clients. if his clients were the actual rioters.
They wanted us to move to a place where we couldn't see the protesters that were taunting the police.
So just real quick, should that be a sign that they're up to no good? Just a little bit.
That's a dead giveaway.
Just a little bit. We don't want anyone here to film what it is we do. Now, of course, Antifa does this all the time locally. They say no streamers. We don't want any videos. They actively will assault people who've got cameras out. They'll threaten and sometimes assault.
And that's when this water bottle gets thrown at one of our guys. He stumbled back, fell over, tripped over a curb.
No, he did not. He did not trip over. Go watch the video.
But it heightened everything at that point. We started trying to figure out how to make an exit because it was just getting too intense there. But we didn't want to look like we were running. That's when somebody hit me with a water bottle. And then we sort of just started moving toward our cars. They continued to sort of pelt us with whatever they could find.
So we got
in the car and we took off. I cannot blame them for being angry.
Hold on. I cannot blame them for being angry. Who amongst us hasn't been really, really angry and decided to completely assault members of the press? Now, I seem to recall that when Donald Trump shared a clear joke of a meme that goes after the press, it was Brian Stelter and company going out of their way to scream about how dangerous it is to put out that kind of rhetoric. That it's hard being a journalist. These heroes, these journalistic heroes are getting attacked. All they want to do is tell you the truth, and we need to call out these kinds of attacks, not make excuses. It doesn't matter that you're angry at the press. Shame on you guys with your assaults. Here they're making excuses.
So a lot of people are very angry, suspicious of the press, the corporate media. All those things come into it at these places, and it was just one of those situations that it was intense. There were people who were angry at everything and everybody, and we happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Wrong place, wrong time? You're a reporter covering an active riot. That's where you're supposed to be. Well, in fairness, it's CNN. They're not actually supposed to be there. They're supposed to run away from instances like this so they can pretend it's not actually happening. The worst part about this story from CNN's perspective is that it was caught on video and now they have to talk about it. Now, to be fair, they waited 4 days and they talked about it on the show no one actually watches. They waited. But now they can technically say, oh, right-wing media says we ignored it. There's no conspiracy. We didn't ignore it. We just put it on that show that no one watches 4 days after it happened. If this exact thing unfolded at a Trump rally, it would be the lead. Jim Acosta gets taunted with words. It is the lead. Jim Acosta goes to a rally with Donald Trump speaking. Someone is in the background screaming an obscenity at Jim Acosta, which is funny. And it is a lead story about the attack on the press. A literal assault against two members of a CNN crew. And they relegate it to a short hit 4 days after it happens. Folks, this is the world in which we now live. And it's only going to get worse. How unfortunate. We'll be keeping an eye on everything that's happening locally and, of course, nationally as it relates to the Derek Chauvin trial. They are the jurors deciding the fate of the former officer. It's almost certainly going to be a guilty verdict. The question is, on what counts? All of them? One of them? Two of them? The result of that verdict will lead to violence in Minneapolis, unfortunately, and probably here in Seattle. So we'll be keeping an eye on all of it. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'll be on the Faulkner Focus tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. Up next, Ben Shapiro.